Commander Cody, the time has come. Execute podcast episode 66.
Yes, my lord. Colby, before we can blast those cannons, you're gonna have to blast that theme song. My name is Johnny J.
And I'm Tim from the Dreaming of Disney podcast.
This is episode 66 of the DMSW podcast.
And a review of episode 3 of the new Ahsoka show on Disney Plus for our Ahsoka recap show miniseries.
Alrighty guys, welcome back to the show. This is episode 3 of our Ahsoka recap series. Before we get into today's episode and bring on our fantastic guest this week, I want to remind everybody, thanks to our good friend Brian from the Rope Dropping Knowledge podcast, who was our guest on the episode last week when we reviewed episodes 1 and 2. Brian has given up a very, very cool prize. This is as legit as it gets for a Star Wars fan, for a very cool prize to win for a giveaway here. He has given up a Force FX Elite Black Series Ahsoka Tano lightsaber. And the way you can get yourself entered in this giveaway is, first, you'll have to head over to Instagram, and you're going to want to follow this account here, at the DMSW Podcast. You're going to want to follow my co-host here, Tim. His podcast that he does with his wife is the Dreaming of Disney podcast. You're going to want to find them at dreaming.of.disney.podcast. And then you're going to want to follow Brian, who is, like I said, our good friend here that was so kind to offer up this lightsaber for this giveaway. You're going to find them at Rope Dropping Knowledge. Follow all three of those accounts on Instagram. And then if you listen back to the episode that we had Brian on, I give you guys a code word on that episode, and then on Friday, September 1st, we will. If you head over to the Rope Dropping Knowledge podcast, Brian will give a second code word on his podcast, and then check out Tim's podcast on Monday, September 4th, and get the third and final piece of the puzzle that you would need here, and you get that third code word from Tim, and then you shoot a DM to me at the DMSW podcast, and let me have all three of those code words, and we will get you entered in this giveaway. Tim?
Yeah, you know, don't sleep on this one. I mean, this is like high quality, you know, collector's lightsaber. They don't put this in stores anymore, so you can't buy this. So, you know, what Brian's doing is very generous, and, you know, I can't stress enough, you don't want to sleep on this one. This is a rare opportunity. And like you said, I'm going to be dropping our code word on September 4th, next Monday. So make sure to listen to our episode then. We'll be recapping our latest Disneyland trip that we did with me and my wife on our anniversary trip. It should be a really fun recap show. If you're into that, if you're into Disney and into Disney parks, check that out. But the reason why we're here is to talk part 3 of Ahsoka, the new show on Disney Plus. And, you know, There's some things with it, you know, pacing might be a little bit off, a little bit maybe of a filler episode, but there's tidbits in this episode that could change the course of Star Wars as we know it. And so we have very special guests. This guy, you just have to listen to his voice. I mean, he has the golden pipes of an angel. I mean, it's so smooth. I mean, it's like pouring vanilla into your morning coffee. I mean, it's just like, I mean, you can listen to him all day. And he does, I mean, he does, you know, he reads, he does the voice tracks for audiobooks, has some great podcasts. So let's get Doug on and let's really dive deep into this episode.
Sounds good. Let's get him in here. Alrighty, our guest on the show this week hails from a state so cool that it has not one, but two official nicknames. If you are a fan of the Michigan State Spartans, or you just in general hate the University of Michigan, you will probably only acknowledge the Great Lakes State. But if hearing names like Bo Schembechler, Lloyd Carr, or Jim Harbaugh make you want to start screaming, "Hail to the victors, valiant," it's all but a guarantee you only refer to the other nickname, which is the Wolverine State. If Steve Irwin were still alive today, and you asked him what the heck is a Wolverine, he would probably tell you, "Crikey! A Wolverine is an aggressive carnivore that punches well above its weight." And coincidentally, that is exactly how I would describe our guest for this episode tonight. Please welcome to the show my good friend, an aggressive carnivore who punches well above his weight, the golden voice of the Great Lakes, Mr. Doug Dorda.
The second. Thank you so much for that, Johnny. You warned me before we got on today that it was probably going to be some incredible thing, and that was fantastic. I don't know how you got through all that.
I think I said corny. Corny as heck. But
It was wonderful.
All in good fun.
I'm so excited to be here. You know, we have been talking about me coming onto the show for a very long time, and Tim, I'm happy you're here. While we do this thing, while we talk about Star Wars and some really great stuff, I don't know if you can feel it. My anticipation, it was like before Ahsoka came out, I'm just ready to go, ready to talk.
Yeah, I didn't know half the things you were talking about in that intro, Johnny. It was some sports ball talk. I know Jim Harbaugh because I am a 49ers fan. That's as far as my sports knowledge goes. So I assume you're talking about Michigan. That's where you're from.
That is correct. Yeah.
Okay, I got that right. Awesome.
And if you guys want to find Doug and reach out and say hi to him, you can find him on Instagram at Doug Dorda. If you are a fan of, I'm sure you will be here by the end of this episode, the golden pipes that you hear every time his mic goes red and he's talking to us, you can find him on Audible. He does a voice recording for the book Just City, and you can find him on his YouTube channel at Doug Dorda. He has a horror short story that he does the dictation for on that as well, Raspberry Bismarck, and he is also part of the D54 podcast. And he is now retired from, but an excellent podcast that is still out there in your podcasting apps if you want to go check it out, the My Dad, I'm Dad podcast. So, again, Doug, thanks so much for coming on the show tonight. We really appreciated you taking the time to be here with us tonight.
Hey, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. You know, like all of this, like I told you a long time ago, my very first podcast appearance ever was actually about the first episode of The Book of Boba Fett. And that's what got me into podcasting and thinking maybe I could do a podcast, which led me to My Dad, I'm Dad, which you and I connected over, Johnny. And through all that, I made all these awesome friends and I dug deep into, you know, like I'm not specifically a Disney podcaster, but I love all things Disney. I have a 2.5-year-old. Try and stop me, you know. And I've loved Star Wars my entire life. And Marvel, it has been a huge part of my life. My dad gave me comic books when I was a kid, you know, like all of this stuff, it just all cycles in. And even though I'm onto, you know, audiobooks and having fun in other spaces, anytime you say you want to come and play, the answer is always going to be, yes, I'm in the bullpen. I've been warming up, coach. Let me in.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned, you know, you have this movie review podcast, D54. You know, you talk about Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, but you also talk about, you know, other movies that, you know, some of us may not think of. So kind of talk about what D54 is and stuff that you guys cover.
Yeah, that is actually really cool. So Amit, the host of that show, had connected me with me when I was making My Dad, I'm Dad, and we did a collaborative episode back in the day when we would talk about all movies and not the very specific genre now, where we talked about movie dads and, you know, our best. He did five, I did five. And afterward, he was like, hey, we're really thinking about leaning into a different direction. Would you mind coming on as a host? Because you'd have a cool, different perspective. And he wanted me to talk about Indian cinema. And I had a cursory kind of familiarity with it, but I love good stories, right? Like, yeah, okay, I'll give it a shot. And he hit me with these movies, Drishyam 1 and 2, and all of this stuff that comes from a very specific region in India that is just some of the best filmmaking I have seen in decades. Like the width and breadth that they go to tell a good story and everything on the screen matters, I can sum up in one sentence. And that we watched an interview with one director talking with another actor and another screenwriter, and they all work together very frequently. It's kind of like Tim Burton and Danny Elfman. And the screenwriter admitted something that blew me away, which was that he doesn't even write the first draft of a movie until he's visited filming locations.
Oh, wow.
That is the dedication to the craft. That is incredible. So I'll just stop it there and say, if you're interested in any of that, go check out D54. You can see some of the videos and some of the things. And the most recent one, and hopefully that video will come out this week, we actually reacted. So it's a great kind of entry point. So you don't even have to see the movie. We reacted to scenes of the movie. Because it was almost like Love Actually, in the fact that it's many vignettes combined to make a cohesive story. And it was perfect. And doing it that way really allows for what we've been trying to do. And I've been trying to be like, man, you come and check these out. These are great. You know, like Star Wars is going to be everywhere. You could put that on whenever. You're going to have to read subtitles to watch these movies, but I promise you they're worth it.
Well, as you know, us millennials, we like to watch Netflix and Disney Plus, all our shows with subtitles on anyway. So we're kind of primed for that. So it works out.
You nailed it.
Did you check out Squid Game? Because when Squid Game came out, I actually enjoyed watching that in with the subtitles on instead of the dubbed over English version. I think
Absolutely.
It was a better experience watching it that way. You feel the same way with these Indian movies that you guys are checking out?
100%. And the tricky thing with some of these Indian movies, and a lot of them are available on Amazon Prime, it turns out Amazon, cool. They're on the forefront of understanding that this is a really great filmmaking region, like spectacular stuff. Paranbu is one I would really recommend to people. It's kind of a tough watch because it's about a father with a daughter with disabilities, but it's spectacular. I almost said it was like Cormac McCarthy meets Forrest Gump. It was like wild. but so good. And yeah, if you watch them in the wrong, like they'll dub in different Indian languages. So sometimes I've put on the wrong one and Amit will be like, not that, because there's a subtle difference in the performance from, you know, one voice actor saying something else than the actual actor on the screen. And you wouldn't know because you don't speak the language, but it does come across different. But like you said, with Squid Game, you know, when you hear the actor deliver the line, your brain just does that immediate kind of click over. And after about 3 minutes, you're in, you know?
Yeah, you just. Yep. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. So the other podcast we mentioned here with Doug is the podcast that he has since retired from and hung up the podcasting mic for. It was the My Dad, I'm Dad podcast. And the best way I can describe this podcast is the line that Doug would open every episode with, which was this podcast is for anyone that has ever loved or lost and seeks to make sense out of those experiences. So, Doug, can you tell us kind of the differences between season one and season two of that show and what the story is behind that podcast?
Yeah, long story short, and I didn't realize when I was making the show, but I kind of made like just a weekly tearjerker, but it was like therapy for me. So, and Johnny knows this very well, but my dad passed away 2 days after my daughter was born. My daughter's now 2.5. So about 9 months after was roughly around the time that the Book of Boba Fett came out, and a friend of mine asked if I wanted to come on because he knew I was a huge Star Wars fan. Of course, I'll be there. And then I thought, well, I've got all these thoughts in my head about like how can you love something so much while letting go of something you loved so much? And I chose making that show as a way to be like, here are fun memories that I had with my dad, or incredible memories, or even painful memories that I had with my dad, and I tried to pull a parenting lesson for myself out of remembering his life in very specific moments. So each of the first 15 episodes, they're maybe 15 minutes apiece, and it's essentially just me kind of doing a memoir about my dad and hoping desperately that if anybody was in the situation I was in, that it would encourage them to at least share their stories with their family. So when we got to season two, because I took a break, I wanted to bring in other parents, other friends, and just get some other advice and also share stories about my dad. So it opened it up a little bit more broad, and then I stuck the landing, I feel, with like the craziest Christmas miracle that's ever occurred to me. And it was a story about my dad and the final Christmas that we had together where he was still himself because he suffered from dementia. So he was, you know, with us at this amazing Christmas village overlay that they do at like a preserved 19th century town here in Michigan, and he rode a carousel, and it was one of the most beautiful moments of my entire life, and I'll never forget it. And I just wanted the show to exist out there as like, if you've ever gone through this, if you're struggling as a parent sometimes, if you're somebody who loves things, if you like good stories. I was just trying to do a lot with a little, because I didn't have a lot of time. I'm a stay-at-home parent primarily, and all of that worked to get us where we are now. But that could be a great segue into talking about Star Wars, because while my dad was suffering from that dementia, there was a moment where we turned on The Mandalorian for him. It was out at the time. And he was laying down on the couch, blanket up to his chin. And he thought it was a movie, right? Because I couldn't explain to him that, you know, streaming and television series, you know, he just thought it was a new Star Wars movie. So that first episode ends. And Grogu's finger comes out. And he looks over at me. And he goes, "Baby Yoda?" And I said, "Yeah, Dad." And he falls back with a giant grin on his face. And that show played the rest of the day. So awesome. I love Star Wars because he introduced me to Star Wars and it pervaded through my entire life, which is why we're now all here doing this.
Yep. And that's a Star Wars memory you'll have with you forever now at this point. That's good stuff right there.
That lives up
right
here.
In the heartstrings. Yeah.
That's powerful. That's super powerful. And now I need to go back and listen to that because that sounds amazing. You know, segue into Star Wars, because Star Wars is about family. I mean, that's the core of that storytelling, is all about family and our connections with family. So, you know, when did you start getting into Star Wars? You know, what brought you into it? You know, tell a little bit of your Star Wars history.
So easily, you know, I just remember watching them when I was young. My dad would introduce me, probably before I can cognitively remember. I know he would always take a balloon and he would vibrate it on his hands and say he could use the Force because it would levitate slightly. Right? So, and this one blew my mind. So my mom was out a couple weeks ago and she said, out of the blue, "I've been watching Star Wars since I was maybe 4 years old." She told me she met Mark Hamill at a mall event in Michigan here.
Wow.
right after the first Star Wars movie came out. I'm like, "Mom, you know I've been like obsessed with this since I was a kid, right? Like, and you met Mark Hamill, and my whole life you waited until like I'm making dinner to drop that bombshell on me. Like I'm in the middle of cutting chicken. You're like, "I met that guy." "Oh, really?
Can you get him on the D54 podcast?"
What? So that all led me into, you know, we had the Gulf of Time. And I went to the theaters to see the special re-releases when they came out. Then we had that Gulf of Time in between those special re-releases and the prequels. So I dug into the comic books and I dug into the books and the old expanded universe, which was what introduced me to Thrawn. And I dug deep. And for all that time, even through the prequels coming out, all of that lived in my head as being 100% immutable truth. That is Star Wars. That's the sequel series that we never got, because we got the prequels, right? And I loved the prequels. I hated the prequels. And then I got back around to loving the prequels. And then eventually, like so many other people, heard they were doing the animated stuff. I was like, "Nah, that's not going to be for me." Well, one cloudy day, I was like, "I'll give it a spin." And I got sucked in. So much so that I went through and did Rebels and have continued with the Bad Batch, because there are seeds of phenomenal storytelling all throughout, thanks to our guy Dave Filoni, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's his proving ground. That's where the master taught the apprentice, and the apprentice eventually became the master. And it's incredible stuff. And that, you know, gets us to where we are now, where it's almost like Star Wars and Marvel did the inverse of one another, where Marvel was all the expanded universe stuff, and then they eventually made one movie that made some more movies that made some more movies that led to an event that led to a TV show. And Star Wars was movies that eventually led to comic books that led to an expanded universe that eventually landed back down to a microcosmic TV show. And our through line is Disney, right? Like, they know how to pump money into things that we care about, because we're going to get a good story, hopefully. Mm-hmm. You know, the vast majority of the time that comes out in the wash is a very good story. And I'm always going to be here for it. Some works better than others. My biggest thing with Ahsoka, this particular show that we're talking about, is whether or not this works for the common Star Wars fan. For me, absolutely, unequivocally, some of the best Star Wars I have ever seen. But I've got years of investment in these characters.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where did, for you, where did the Clone Wars and Rebels series kind of stack up against some of the other Star Wars projects? Is it almost too hard to kind of rank them against each other because it's just a completely different animal being an animated series and you can do so many more things with the different scenes and everything being having that freedom with the animation? But can you compare them to, and if so, where do you kind of rank them against some of the movies? Are they near some of the best of the best, you think, or middle ground, or what do you think?
Well, I think the Clone Wars exists to heal the wounds of the prequels. It is 100% the reason that show and the movie ever even came into play. Like, what's that gap of time in between Anakin from the Clone Wars to Anakin in Revenge of the Sith? Like, what happened in that gulf of time? Where are we in time, and why do I care about this character who was a broody teenager here, and now he's a broody adult here? Where was the Darth Vader thing? Like, when was he ever my hero? Because he was never really a hero in those movies. You know, you could make arguments that there are some spots where that happens. You empathize with him because he's fallen in love with somebody and he eventually gets to have a life with that person, but you're never really fully ingratiated. And that's why Ahsoka being such a linchpin in that series works, because she's then your Star Wars Rosetta Stone. She connects all timelines. To sum it up quickly, because I could just go on and on, Clone Wars and Rebels together work way better than the sequel series in terms of telling a cohesive story. And a lot of that deals with Ahsoka Tano, with Captain Rex, with the clones themselves. There is so much more human story delivered in those series than what we get to see there. And a lot of that has to do with the amount of time we get to spend there, with the fun that we can have with animation, right? And that's something I'll talk about later, is how good a job they've done making Hera and Ahsoka look good in a live-action medium, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they knocked that out of the park, because it could have looked abysmal, but it looks great. And Rebels is, because it's shorter, it's almost better. I would recommend anybody watch Rebels, especially into this show, because we're going to get Thrawn. But Kanan Jarrus or Caleb Dune, you know, the people that know that show really well, his ultimate sacrifice, the things that he goes through, the way that he trains Sabine originally, like all of the seeds of things that we're seeing coming to fruition now were 100% there. It's just another season of Rebels that we're watching. And I really wish that by this third episode, we would have at least gotten some jumps back in time to live action scenes that remind us as a viewer, or inform us as a casual viewer, about what had taken place there. Because Disney Plus really tried, right? Like, they had their, here's our episode playlist that we suggest you watch. Here's 10 essential Ahsoka episodes. They gotta know, people who don't like animation aren't gonna go there. Mm-hmm. I can't fault those people. I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conundrum. It's a really weird place for me to be in, because I am absolutely head over heels in love. I've got issues with the pacing in some of the episodes here. Like the training montage in this one, or not the montage, just the scene. Like, why did we need to spend 5 minutes with Ahsoka just kind of slowly circling around? Like, we get it.
Yeah, we got the full
teaching
scene.
Her. You know, we know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We know. We've seen it in other stuff. But, you know, then we get to the space battle a little bit later on, and it's one of the most compelling and thrilling things I've seen in Star Wars in years. You know, it's gorgeous. Absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. But The Mandalorian exists as a jumping on point for anybody ever, and it has Grogu. Andor is for your, like, hey, are you an adult that is sick of hearing about silly animation, or you want some real genuine thrills to exist here? Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also probably not be a regular Star Wars viewer and still enjoy that experience. Here we are in the exact opposite boat. Because I got to know, especially from you, Johnny, like, having watched this third episode, Are you invested or are you just enjoying because it looks fun, bang, bang, shoot 'em up?
Yeah, for me, we kind of touched on that last week. I definitely regret not going back and spending more time and investing in both the animated shows and in developing that connection to the Ahsoka character, because even after this now third episode, I feel exactly the same way as I felt after the first two. Like, it's good Star Wars quality content. I can clearly see that, but there's just no feeling between me and that character right now. And I don't know why I picked it up so quickly when Mandalorian came out, because within the first 8 seconds of that show, I was like, this guy, me, we're friends for life. Like, this is my Star Wars that I will go back and watch 1,000 times after this. And I'm not getting that with Ahsoka and Sabine yet. And maybe by the time we get through the full length of the show, we'll get there. But at least for me, I can just tell that because I didn't invest in the animated stuff, it's just like generic good Star Wars content to me. That connection to the character is not there.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, Mandalorian was created for the general audience. It was created for someone who's like, oh, I know Star Wars, but this is something new. We haven't seen this before. We can all, you know, watch it, enjoy it. It's for the everyday person. Ahsoka, well, great. It's awesome. You definitely need that. If you want to connect with those characters, you need to have that background information, because that's what it's all based off of. And so, you know, it's really hard to jump into it and to feel invested in this character. Because with Mandalorian, we had a lot of lead up because, you know, it was the first time we seen him. We knew who Mandalorians were. We knew who Boba Fett was. You knew he was kind of like the same, you know, race. But, you know, they spent a lot of time building that character. And, you know, with Baby Yoda, it was like, oh, that's Baby Yoda. And that just what drew everybody in, and stormtroopers and like all the action. So with Ahsoka, now it's, you know, it's I can see with the more casual fan, it can be a little bit harder to get into. It's going to take a little bit longer. But, you know, I foresee that it's going to be well worth the effort. I predict in the next episode or two, we're going to be getting those flashbacks where Anakin's going to pop up, and then everybody's going to be like, oh, my God, this is amazing. But yeah. So you talked about, Doug, how you felt about the first three episodes. So let's get into, you know, episode three, or I should say part three. It's not an episode. It's not a chapter. It's a part, part three. And so we come in and we see Sabine training with Hu Yang, and that was, I have to agree with you. That was like, okay, we're hanging on this for a little bit. We see that she's picking up her training and everything. One thing, and maybe we can talk about this, you know, they're really going back to the original trilogy idea that anybody can be a Jedi. Anybody can use the Force. Just as long as you train hard enough. Yes, talent is a factor, but anybody can tap into the Force because it's in everybody. Prequels was, oh, midichlorians. You have to have this bacteria in your bloodstream. If you have a high M count, then you're good to go. So, you know, what do you guys think about? Are we retconning? Are we taking back what we learned in prequels? Or are we charting, you know, original trilogy territory where if you train hard enough, you can be a Jedi?
I think it's a little mixture of the two, honestly. And what I really enjoy that aspect of it. I love that aspect of it. Because again, in Rebels, we get to see Kanan start to train Sabine, right? And it's mm-hmm. less about whether or not you're going to be a Jedi or a Force user, whether or not you're going to have the ideals of helping other people. Because Ahsoka herself is not actually a Jedi anymore. You know, it's mm-hmm. one of the best arcs. And Johnny, I would strongly recommend you watch at least that episode. You know, you're competitive, so I challenge you. You got to watch that, and you got to watch the Mortis arc by tomorrow. No. That episode is incredible, and they even pull off like an amazing fugitive sequence where Ahsoka has to jump out of a tunnel. But her break from the Jedi Order is one of the most interesting and compelling things about the character, and that's the reason she has the white lightsabers. And this is covered in the books. She actually finds kyber crystals from, I believe it was an Inquisitor, and sings them back from being red. And that's why they're white and not blue or green, you know. So it is another indication that she is adjacent to, but not necessarily this thing. It's, you know, she's always kind of a partner to it. You know, think of her like a private detective instead of an actual Jedi, you know, like a consultant almost. You know, all the qualifications, but I live over here. I do my own thing. So to me, it seems like that's what she's trying to really kind of focus on and bring out in Sabine, another new leader, another very good force in the galaxy for being where you need to be and helping the people who need help. And that means that you can kind of walk one side or the other. It's almost like in Civil War, you know, where you don't necessarily want to be on one side or the other. You kind of want to be in the middle. And we get there by the time we end with Endgame and Infinity War. You know, everybody's like, okay, we have to do what we have to do when we have to do it. But when you're forced to make those choices, it becomes less interesting. And the gray Jedi perspective has been a really cool thought exercise in the Star Wars fandom for years. You know, and then we have our unknowns, right? We have, these other dark force users, or we don't even really know what their motives are, but I'm really intrigued by them. But to answer your question, I think it's a little bit of the best of both worlds. You can be Jedi-like without necessarily being a Jedi, just so long as you challenge yourself to be better or the best version of someone who can help others. And that, to me, is more compelling than you've got X amount of midichlorians, or you now have to be hamstrung by the rules of this order forever. Because we've seen it collapse twice. We saw it collapse in the prequel trilogy, and then we see the brief flashes of it collapsing when Luke tries to make his new order, right? Mm-hmm. And now Rey's going to try to do it again.
Yeah.
And Ahsoka even delivers that line, like, it worked for a millennium, and then it didn't.
Yep. Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting how they, you know, how if they're going to weave this storyline of the anybody can be a Jedi into these new movies that they're going to be coming off with Rey. So yeah, I thought that although that sequence was a little long in the tooth, I think there was those nuggets in there that's like made you be like, wait, what are they trying to get at here? You know, and Hu Yang, I mean, he even, you know, said it like, that's, you know, she would not have been accepted in a Jedi order. She does not have what it takes. And, you know, obviously, like you said, Ahsoka says it's, you know, it failed. That's
more
why,
to it,
you know,
than that.
Yeah, it's more to it. And so some interesting, some tidbits in there that they're dropping in there to kind of change our thinking. It's like, this is how it was in prequels. It's not the same time frame anymore. So, so we had a character in here that we saw in a past show, Andor, Mon Mothma. She's back. Great to see her. She is now officially Chancellor of the New Republic.
She's fantastic. She's so good.
She's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Love seeing her. And she shined in Andor. I mean, that's a whole nother podcast, but Andor was just phenomenal.
Yeah. Don't get me started. Andor is
not even just storytelling, not Star Wars storytelling, but just storytelling drama in general was amazing.
Tough part to clear.
Anyways. Yeah. So to see her in this, and that she's Chancellor, makes me kind of sad thinking about what happens in The Force Awakens. You know, how does that all bridge? But that's a whole other subject as well. So, yeah, what did you guys think of that scene, you know, with Chancellor and Hera? What did you guys think of that?
So, for me, my favorite part with this scene was it was the first time that in these three episodes that I got my first little taste of, like, okay, here's something with this Ahsoka character that I can, or I'm sorry, with this Hera character that I can grab onto. And it was like her, you could tell like she was just biting her tongue. She didn't want to talk back to the, what was it, Senator Jono there, and didn't want to offend him. But eventually he pushed her far enough and hit those buttons the right way where she kind of snapped at him and was like, did you fight in this war?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah, I was like pumping the fist in the air. I was like, yes, this is the character that I think I can get behind in this show. I love that badass quality that like we get from Mando, from the, like I said, that the first few seconds of that first episode. And I love seeing that here from her character. So I this was this was my favorite part of the episode, was just this scene interacting with her. And like you guys said, just love seeing Mon Mothma back on. Andor is another one of my favorite Star Wars projects that I've ever seen. I think that show should be watched by everybody, Star Wars fan or not. There is plenty of story there for anybody, whether you're into the Star Wars universe or not, that you can appreciate everything that's going on in that show. So love seeing Mon Mothma back and love seeing that that toughness coming out of Hera.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add in that scene, because I agree with you 100%, was that when she starts talking about Thrawn, when Hera starts talking about Thrawn, it occurred to me that, like, the show hasn't done a very good job yet of telling the common viewer why Thrawn is such a threat and why he is such a force to be reckoned with. And we're talking, these books go back to before the prequels and before the sequels, before the Clone Wars, where the character was introduced. Those things are now no longer canon, but there are new books that are canon that deal with the character as well. And they brought him into Rebels to make him the primary antagonist, which was a very brilliant idea. Here's a scene from one of the episodes of Rebels that I think describes who Thrawn is. He's on Lothal, he's on one of the Imperial shipyards, and he has discovered that there is a rat in one of the shipping manufacturing plants that is purposely putting in failure points into some of the Imperial machinery. And he knows who it is, and he tasks that person with testing out his own speeder. And you don't see it, but he essentially forces that person to kill himself by testing it to a limit in a failure point. You just hear an explosion as he turns around and addresses the camera, like, "So we'll have no more of this." Like, he's not
in
malevolent.
In an animated show.
In an animated crazy. Show.
That's crazy.
He is not malevolent. He is smart. He is cunning. And the two things that he does are surround himself with things that nullify the Force, so that it's always an equal playing field around him, and he plays 4D chess. And he does this by examining art. And, you know, some of your other guests have already talked about this, but he's the Moriarty of the Star Wars universe. He's always one step ahead in any situation. And again, he's not malevolent. He's very cool, very, very level-headed. Like, Lars Mikkelsen's voice, and he will be him in the show, is the perfect, "Thrawn is here, always, right here. And we will make this maneuver now." And it's spectacular because he just wants to win or prove a theory correct. It's not necessarily born out of any, like, hatred for a family or some crazy cosmic desire. He just is that good at what he does and is constantly going to prove it. Not trying to, going to. And the end of this episode is so cool because what takes him away from us, you know, why he's gone, is because of those Purgle that we see, those gigantic space whales, right? So in Rebels, you constantly are asking yourself the question, if there are two Jedi this close to the events of A New Hope, why is nobody talking about them? Where did they go? Why is nobody talking about them? Well, one of them dies. Spoilers, sorry. And the other one, Ezra Bridger, who we're obviously looking after, at the end of the episode, at the end of the series, his, like, special force ability is that he can call animals to him. And he is having a final confrontation with Thrawn on the deck of a ship, calls these Purgle to him, and they go off in light space, in light speed, so fast and so far that nobody knows where they've gone. So he sacrifices himself by just removing the biggest threat and the biggest hero to a place unknown. And that's where we're going. But the casual viewer doesn't know that.
Doesn't know it yet. But now you got us all fired up. Yeah. And
everybody's going to listen to this podcast and everybody's going to know. So there you go.
I'm thinking now Thrawn might end up being my guy from this show. I might end up rooting for the bad guy in this one, because all I could think about while you're describing him and going into that much detail talking about him is, like, all I hear is he's the Bill Belichick of the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
Like, he's just that master tactician that is playing 4D chess when everyone else is playing regular space checkers.
Exactly. You nailed it. Like, that was,
can't wait.
The heart of what I really wanted when I got on tonight, I was like, God, I hope I don't overstay my welcome and talk too much. But it's almost like the show was misnamed. I wish it had been called Thrawn. Mm-hmm. And then we had reverse told the story about Ahsoka and what the team has been doing to find him, but following him in his perspective. Because doing that, we would have been introduced to a new character for the casual viewer and an old favorite for people going back 40 plus years. And then we would have been able to figure out these other things. Because Thrawn also has a story with Anakin. He has a story with Darth Vader. These are all now canon events that exist in the books. And it's incredible. The width and breadth of what his character has done, where he's been, what he's achieved, the Chiss, like all the, you know, being out on the outskirts of the galaxy. Everything that we're talking about here is already well documented, but Thrawn could have been a better entry point, I think. The fact that we got Ahsoka in The Mandalorian was great and it was wonderful, but we could have just gotten from his own internal monologue all the backstory we would have needed to understand why Ahsoka matters so much in this show.
All right, so if Kathleen Kennedy is listening to this episode today, her little antennas are going up and she's like, ooh, Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, you guys want to do a Thrawn series with me? Print some more money. Print that Star Wars money.
I mean, there hasn't been a series or show or movie that's focused on the bad guy. I mean, obviously, you know, Star Wars is all about hope and you know, the good guys and bring balance and the light. But how great would it be if I guess one is coming, the Acolyte.
Correct.
You know, there is one coming that's going to focus on the dark side user. That's the main character. So I guess we are getting that. But that's just going to be a nice twist to everything that we're used to, you know, rooting for the good guy. Everybody loves to root for a bad guy every now and again. So getting back onto the episode. So we get our first, you know, taste or reference to Kanan in this episode. And that's through their son, him and Hera's son, Jason. And, you know, he says, you know, oh, Aunt Sabine's going to be a Jedi. And then he says, I want to be a Jedi. And you can see that look in Hera's face, like, I know you do. She doesn't say, I want you to also. She says, I know you do.
I know you do.
Yeah. So we can, you know, again, another callback that the casual fan will have no idea, like, who's this kid? I don't know who this kid is. You know, it's like, why is it important? But for those who are listening, Hera and Kanan, the Jedi who was in that you referred to in the Rebels, who sacrificed himself, they had a son, Jason. So I was also listening with the watching with the subtitles on, captions on, and I was for some reason suspecting to spell Jason like humans spell Jason, Jason, but no, it's Jacen. So a little Star Wars twist.
Well, and it's also, so Space that's a Jason. Deeper starter Star Wars twist, because that was the name of one of Han and Leia's children in the old books that are no longer canon. So when that episode of Rebels aired and we got that little tease at the end where you see Jason, they literally put, like, yes, spelled the way you think. So it's kind of a nod to another thing. Like, it gets all muddy, right? You know, like, all the stuff that had existed and all the stuff that is now existed, and what Filoni has done so well up to this point is kind of course correct and try to bring all this stuff back together. Have your cake and eat it too, but we're just going to serve it on a dish you didn't expect, right? Like, especially with the sequel trilogy kind of hitting in a way that didn't necessarily warm everyone to what Star Wars could eventually be. These shows are doing an amazing, wonderful, spectacular job of bringing everyone back into the fold and saying, you can play again. Here's your flavor. Here's your flavor. Andor is this. Mando is this. Ahsoka is what feels to me the most like the original trilogy. And that is wonderful and spectacular and spends time with characters that I have invested a lot of my life with. I just desperately desire that you, Johnny, by the end of it, will be like, I get it. I see why this character matters so much now.
You're making Tim smile too. That was his almost his exact word for word quote last week, was that it is like old Star Wars all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's some people that I've been talking to, coworkers, you know, they're like, ah, it's kind of slow. You know, I'm losing interest. I'm falling asleep. It should be called Ahsoka, not Ahsoka.
Good but, burn.
So, I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, we talked about there are some pacing issues. Like, why did they wait, you know, spend so much time on that? But, I mean, you go back and watch A New Hope. I mean, that's pretty slow. I mean,
you had, you made that point in one of the other episodes. And with the pacing issues, I think it all just boils down to the fact that Dave Filoni loves this character so much, and he gets a chance to put this character into a live action medium in a big, bad, bold way with some extraordinary production value and a musical score that is ripped directly out of John Williams's like fever dreams, right? Like, it just feels like part and parcel everything that Star Wars had ever been, and it feels like the apprentice is doing the trials, right? Like, that's what Filoni is really working on here. Like, his proof of concept was Mandalorian working with Jon Favreau, but now he's going to take his own baby, right? Like, it's very much like what Paul Dini did with Harley Quinn in the DC Batman show. But she's a hero, you know, and I get a chance to bring her in and I get to make it this big, bold thing. But unfortunately, you have people who were fans of the movies first and not necessarily, like, that Batman animated show has its own fan base that grew up organically with it, you know, and this is kind of an inverse type of deal. And I have to imagine he's just in love with everything that he wrote on a page. He wants all the Ahsoka he can get into a frame as much as possible, and I'm here for it. But there are those moments that lag a little bit. And like you said, yeah, you watch the first 20 minutes of A New Hope and you'd be like, wow, these droids sure are going through the desert. There they are. Bye, guys. I guess we'll see somebody here in 10, 20 minutes. But then, you know, like bringing in Hu Yang, and there's an amazing Clone Wars episode that's almost entirely just about him, and you learn from him how Jedi make lightsabers. And you start to learn more about him, and it's still David Tennant doing the voice. Like, there's incredible behind the scenes work going on here, and love that is just splashed all over the screen. So I'll forgive it, those things. But I get it, especially from like a more casual fan, or somebody that just watched Andor, or somebody that just watched Mando season 3, where we are moving. We're moving. There's going to be a lot of character drama in this series because Ahsoka has issues with Anakin. She has issues with everything that occurred in the Rebels series, and she has issues with Thrawn. You know, like, I don't know if we're going to pick it up too much faster. These other characters also seem like they have connections to the Jedi, and I feel like we're going to get what the Clone Wars did so well, which was humanize and personalize the story, even though there's some of the best lightsaber action you'll ever see, which this show also does. But, you know, take the slow moments when you can get them, because I'd rather have this than not. You know, it's
definitely
it's spectacular.
100%. You know, that's another thing that, you know, I wanted to bring up again. You know, the streaming world, we've gotten used to no set, you know, total run times. So, you know, we're, you know, back in the day when you had regular TV, you know, you had a 30-minute show, which is 22 minutes without commercials, or you had a one-hour show, it was 44 minutes without commercials. Now we're getting, you know, first two episodes was, you know, 57 minutes, and then you have one about 50 minutes, and then you get one that's 37 minutes, and you're like, what just happened? I just started watching this thing. And so there's no consistent time. I get it. It's like the story is a story. It's like if the story is 20 minutes long, the story is 20 minutes long. But it's like, how do you guys feel about like when you're expecting the last two episodes have been at least an hour and now we're served one that's, you know, just a little bit over 30 minutes. Do you guys feel cheated? Do you guys feel like I wanted more? What do you think about that?
I my attack on that is I try the best I can to just always, even if in the moment I'm not a huge fan of the decisions they're doing or the way they're trying to pull it off, always at least watch it the whole way through. Get to the end of the series, let the story play itself out, let the director tell the story the way he wants to tell it, and then go back and you can kind of analyze, was it too long, was it too short, type of thing. And it's worked both ways for me. With the on the MCU side, I just the most recent show was Secret Invasion, and every week I was like, okay, bite my tongue, like just let it play out. Maybe it'll get better. And it almost felt like Game of Thrones, it kind of in a way too. The final season of that was like, there's no way they could butcher it this bad. They'll fix it next week. And then you'd watch next week and you're like, okay, well, this is like a once in a generation type show. I'm sure they'll fix it this week. And then before you know it, it's over and Bran is sitting on the throne. And you're like, what did I just watch? So I'm hoping we play it out here, through, like I said, through Ahsoka. My trust is with Dave Filoni. I think even if there's an episode here and there along the way that right now I'm not a humongous fan of, I think when it is all is said and done, I have all the faith in the world that that guy's going to tell a perfect chef's kiss type of Star Wars story here. And again, like I kind of said last week too, even if it's not for me, I can certainly appreciate that it's fantastic Star Wars quality. And for those people like Doug and the other guests we've had that have put that time in and watched all those shows, I get enjoyment out of it because I can just tell that for them, it's going to be just blowing their doors off. This character that they've watched for hours and hours and hours of their life is now in another point in her story and her journey, and they get to watch her in live action. I get enjoyment out of that part of it too. So,
yeah, I'll echo that and also say this. If an episode tells me a cohesive story, a cohesive mini story that can exist in and of itself, and I don't feel like, oh man, I wanted more of this or I wanted more of this. You know, like we got to the point where we saw the Purrgil and we know that something is happening. So clearly we're setting up, you know, another arc or something that needs to happen on that planetary surface where there's probably going to be a confrontation and we're going to learn a little bit more about our other antagonists. I'm totally fine with that because then all of a sudden it would have had to be a 2-hour long episode as opposed to this 37 minute, very fine, excellent space battle. You know, really, really cool kind of middling chapter. You know, I think the third episode in most of these Disney Plus series always is either a meh or whoa. And luckily this one was a meh, you know, like there was not any moment that I hated, but I was like, okay, we could have seen some more incredible stuff. You know, I'm sure we could have told, like I talked about earlier, this, the moment where Hu Yang is talking to her and is like, well, you come from a long line of unconventional Jedi. There's your flashbacks. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to make this a full hour-long episode, that would have been the time to do it. That would have been the time to grab everybody saying Ahsoka and give them a reason to understand why they need to invest time in these characters that they hadn't previously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So getting into, you know, further into the episode, we get our first space battle, you know, Star Wars, you know, it's all about the dogfights. And I feel like this was pulled straight out of those World War II films that George Lucas did for, studied for the, for A New Hope. I mean, even to the fact that they used, I mean, we saw these types of ships in Star Wars Resistance, another animated show, that came out, something that we haven't seen in live action yet. In fact, I don't think we've ever seen a Jedi fight in space wing of a ship. So that was pretty cool. Also, you know, quick costume change for Ahsoka. She was able to put on that suit and be able to fit her head tails into the little cutouts just perfectly.
That's very Star Wars.
So it was like, oh, okay. She must have had that ready.
She's the Force. She's the Force.
Oh, of course. She just slipped right into that. But yeah, no, that was a great, you know, obviously a great callback to, you know, A New Hope. And with the Falcon, and then, you know, shooting the I don't even know what those ships are called, just the fighters. But yeah, that was a great, you know, lot of tension right there as they're trying to scan the Aya Scion, the ship thing, and the hyperspace ring as they figure out. You know, what'd you guys think of that scene? Were you excited? See more of it. What'd you think?
I thought it was excellent. I thought it was just captivatingly well filmed. I thought everything that you brought up, you know, it felt like a dogfight. It felt like old school, where just, you know, two people in a thing and they're at the disadvantage and they know they're at the disadvantage. So they're using every single trick that they've got. You know, it felt one part Western, felt one part World War One. And the fact that we finally get Ahsoka and Sabine kind of like gelling again, right? Like they're almost kicking the dust off and the rust off of how they used to work together. And that sequence where she's out on the wing, I got a little worried. I was like, are we going to do a Leia suck myself back into the ship thing here for a moment? And the fact that Dave Filoni had considered that, and the fact that she gets back into the ship by Sabine tilting the wing and kicking her essentially back in was like such a smart subversion of what we, you know, potentially could have seen. And I was just really thrilled to see it. And it looks stunning. It looks spectacular. And, you know, Sabine's wearing the old, like, who wears that headset in a galaxy where there's space wizards, you know, but she's wearing that thing. And it all, like, it felt so similar, but felt new and unique and felt really thrilling. And I was taken with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about you, Tim? What'd you think of that episode, of that part of the episode?
No, I thought it was great. I mean, I think it was the action that episode needed. You know, it started off slow, but, you know, really picked up. And then obviously we see the space whales, or they call them star whales, purgles. You know, it was great to see those in live. And just the visuals of this show. I mean, they have learned so much how to use this technology. This virtual set technology. I mean, obviously a lot I've seen, you know, we've all seen the behind the scenes photos that they've released so far. So they're still using blue screen and green screen and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, it's like they're taking, you know, blockbuster feature film visuals quality, bringing it to a TV show. I mean, it's amazing what they're doing, what they've learned from The Mandalorian and all the, you know, the shows so far. I mean, obviously, Disney sees the value and the importance of this show, that they're spending the money on it to make sure that it looks as good as it possibly can, because I don't think they want a repeat of Obi-Wan. So, I loved it. That was great.
And I picture to bring the Marvel side into it again, because I just can't help myself, but I picture like that scene in Civil War where Thunderbolt Ross plays the clips to the Avengers all sitting at the table, and it's been memed to death now. Everyone's put that like different goofy video up on the TV and they're all looking embarrassed and looking down at the table. But like I hope that is a reflection of what is actually going on over at Marvel Studios right now. I want Ahsoka to be on the TV and I want Kevin Feige to be up at the head of the table like Thunderbolt Ross, like pointing at the TV, looking at his entire team, being like, where's this? Where's this? We're owned by the same company. Come on, guys. Let's go. Pick up the pace.
Yeah, the fact that those Purgle come out of the shadows or you know, the mist or whatever it is, and there's that sound and the and just like it was like the most sweepingly engaging, visually stunning, I couldn't believe I just saw that moment that I've had in Star Wars since, yeah, to some degree, in Episode One when there's the, you know, the big fish and then there's always a bigger fish. Like that, that kind of got me too, but I was, you know, younger at the time when I watched that. But definitely in, you know, old Star Wars where, you know, we park the Falcon and then we realize we're inside the mouth of a beast, right? Like these creatures, though, the fact that we kind of end with understanding that ancient Jedi set light speed courses along their migration pattern, I was like, okay, we're really doing something interesting here that could be so extraordinarily kind of galaxy expanding for the rest of us Star Wars fans, and could be another key to the casual fan really getting into this more, right? Because now it's old Star Wars. Now it's every Jedi. Now it's all time, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that Ezra was pulled off by one of these things and that, you know, Thrawn was taken away by one of these things is a little bit less important for the viewer to understand now, because it is just a storytelling device to say, like, maybe we follow these things and get to somewhere else. But that ending with that was very cool for me to see. Very special. Mm-hmm. And that sound at the end of that very kind of white knuckle sequence was spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also see that now there is tension between our villains, You know, we see what's her name?
Morgan Elsbeth.
Shin.
Morgan.
Yeah, Morgan.
And Shin.
Yeah, Morgan and Shin. You see, they're not gelling. Obviously there's some tension between them. It's like, oh, you couldn't defeat him. Look, well, you know, hold my beer. Type situation.
I love that moment. I love that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, we see that there's trouble in paradise for the antagonists in this episode. So it's great to see that tension between the two of them. And so they land, we get some more exposition about this ship that they're building, and that's, you know, it can go great distances, great speeds. You know, this also brings up another, to play devil's advocate here. Are we expanding the Star Wars universe too much? You know, you have the core, trilogy, original trilogy, Loyalist, like the Star Wars is episodes 4, 5, and 6. That's it. Nothing. All this other stuff doesn't count. And then you have, more people like us is like, give us all the Star Wars. Let's give it all. I want to eat it up. But are we going too far? Are we, looking at another galaxy far, far away, a galaxy far, 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 far away? Are we doing too much? What do you guys think? Is this something that we should be going down the road with?
Well, I'll put it into two classes. Is Star Wars for you Star Wars, or is Star Wars for you the Skywalkers? Because if Star Wars for you is the Skywalkers, you checked out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if Star Wars for you is great stories, cool space battles, archetypes of characters that can exist in this universe that could literally become all be all, which is evident, in Galaxy's Edge in Batuu. Like, you literally just get to go and play there. As you already said, Tim, are we now going to be delivered a Jedi who's not even a Force user? Which is what I like. If that cup had flown into her hand in that scene, I would have been like, no, not yet. That's not right. And I'm glad we didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if for you, Star Wars can be divorced from the Skywalker family and the Skywalker saga, then no, we're not expanding it too far because we've already been doing it. They're in the books, and again, like, I narrate audiobooks, but the guy who does the Star Wars audiobooks, the vast majority, incredible. And he's been your favorite characters more often than the person who played those characters has been those characters. Mark Thompson, just sensational, stellar. There are several books out there about Thrawn. There are several books about Ahsoka. There's an amazing book called Master and Apprentice all about Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan in the early stages of their apprenticeship. There's all this stuff. It's always been out there, but you will now get to pick and choose when you want to care and what you want to care about. And that's what I think is going to be really special about going that far out. Because now, yes, our character that we loved, especially if you love that character, goes there, you can go and enjoy that. But then it might break open the door for a brand new batch of stories that can be told with characters who have no connections to the Skywalkers whatsoever. And that is exciting to me, because that means when my daughter gets old enough to watch any of this stuff, she might care about that more than Luke Skywalker. And that would be exciting.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, Star Wars is for everybody. And we all, make our connections, some are more connected, like you said, to the Skywalkers, and that's their story. Luke is their guy, and it's, for the newer generation, like, they really like Rey, look what she's doing, or you got Poe, you got Finn. I love just the expanding of lore, and you see that a lot more, like, in the video games. Knights of the Old Republic, Jedi Fallen Order, Survivor, all that stuff. It's just like, I love it. I just eat it up. And I just want to know more and more and more. I want to know the mythology. I want to know the history. So that's why I'm really excited for the Dawn of the Jedi movie that's going to be coming out. It's like, I want to know more about that stuff. It's like, I love that stuff. So I'm excited for what they're doing and how they're exploring these places beyond what we're used to hearing and seeing. So challenging fans to think maybe what you think is Star Wars, maybe there's a little bit more to it than you originally thought. So we see, going back to the episode, they land on the planet Cetos, and they power down the, you know, the, so they throw off their sensors. We see Baylan for the first time in this episode. And I love this character so much.
Imposing presence is.
Oh, I mean, he's so good, and it's so tragic that, you know, what happened to Ray, and that we won't be able to see him again. But it's like his presence on screen is so good, and I just can't wait to see what they reveal more about Baylan Skrull. I mean, he is just such a commanding presence, and just like, you just want to. Is he a Sith? Is he a Jedi? We know where Ahsoka stands. You know, she's the gray Jedi. So she's on the good side, but she doesn't align herself with the Jedi. But we know she's good. Who is this guy? And who is Baylan? Who is Shin? Where do they stand? I can't wait to see what they reveal more about that. Obviously, he knows Anakin because we've seen that in the marketing. So what's his connection there? I just can't wait to see more of it. What do you guys think about it?
I love this character. Yeah. I couldn't agree. Well, honestly, both of these characters. And I think it's interesting that the Padawan, you know, Shin has the braid, like the Padawan mm-hmm. braid. And I think it's interesting that there's connections and there's all these callbacks. Like, clearly there's a respect, you know, an extreme respect between the Jedi and whatever these people are. My hunch says, well, clearly they are. They're mercenaries, right? They were hired to do a job.
Yep.
But what did they give up to be able to do that? Why are their lightsabers orange? In that book I was talking about, Master and Apprentice, there is another type of crystal you could put in a lightsaber hilt, and it will make it orange. It's called a Kolon crystal, not a Kyber crystal. But that was just like a fun storytelling device to kind of shock and awe. And I doubt that's the case here. You know, I think it has more to do with why Ahsoka's lightsabers are white. And I want to get more into that, right? I really, really want to learn a lot about these characters. But I love that there's kind of that Darth Maul shot in, I think it was even the first episode when Shin mm-hmm. goes after Sabine. Like, that just made my heart thump, right? Because I've got my issues with episode one. And if you don't, you're lying. But there are some amazing moments in that movie that are just spectacular. And that is one of them. And I loved kind of seeing that rhyme like you had brought up in the past. Mm-hmm. But I really want to know more about these characters. And I'm glad we have them, because the downside of Thrawn being here, even though he's such an incredible character, is that Lars Mikkelsen is on the older side, right? Like, so he's going to be able to deliver great lines, but action cannot be handled by that man. And he normally doesn't do it in the books. He did as a younger character. He's a very good fighter, but he's very technical, right? He's the type of guy that can just block you until he can hit you in the throat, and then you just go down. So even seeing that fight wouldn't be very engaging. And that's why I like these characters here, and that's another potential point for us to get a flashback, because it's going to be critical, right? Like, if we don't see Ahsoka's connection to Anakin in a meaningful way, because we've seen her talk to Luke, right? Like, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. We've seen that happen.
Yeah.
But if we don't get that, and if we don't get where was Ahsoka during the events of the original trilogy, it's going to be strange. But I am glad we have these characters to sink our teeth into, because it gives us, especially for the common fans and us, it gives us something to talk about around that water cooler. You know, like, oh, Sloka, but yeah, what about Ray? He looked really cool standing there, right?
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah,
that's what I like about that's what I like about these villains, is like, it's very slow. Like, they're not just coming right out and being like, "Yep, they're fully bad. They're just gonna be bad guys the entire time." They're putting those little hints, those little seeds in your mind already. Like, it's clear that he has a lot of respect for Ahsoka Tano. And we got that in, what was that, at the end of episode 2, I think. And then, as you touched on earlier, Tim, we pick it up that Shin doesn't have really a good relationship with Morgan Elsbeth there. So I love that they're kind of stringing us along on the bad guys, where you're like, okay, they're on the bad side, it kind of feels like, but the doors open for them to at some point turn and come to the side with Ahsoka and her team too. And who knows, once Thrawn shows up, what does he bring with him? How many other bad guys are already on his side? And where do these characters fall when all things are said and done? Do they stay kind of as the mercenaries and helping the bad guys, or do they flip over and go with the Team Ahsoka? So I like the way they're handling them.
Yeah. So, you know, Doug, everything, you know, we've asked all of our guests so far, you know, predictions for the future. You know, where do you see this going? You know, are we going to, you know, some say, oh, we're going to tie this into, you know, the sequel trilogy. This is the one that's going to tie it in, or, you know, we're going to get flashbacks. And you made that pretty well known that we got to have flashbacks, but where do you see this going in the next, what we have, quick math here, five more episodes.
Yeah, five more episodes. I think what we're doing, because they even said in our marketing material, Heir to the Empire. And if you read those initial three books that were written by Timothy Zahn, you know, way back when we didn't know we would get any more Star Wars. So he was the Dave Filoni of his time. They gave him the keys to the kingdom, make your own sequel trilogy. And he did. And it's excellent. I think we're going to get a version of that. Right, because we're course correcting, and we've course corrected for a very long time, and I think we'll go there. And in that series, Thrawn's ultimate plan to be able to bring power back to the Empire is to discover the location of a long-lost fleet of ships that would make their total firepower so insurmountable that nobody could stand in their way. Right, and
sounds like the final order.
Yes, right. So I think. Instead, though, because the Final Order does that a little bit later on, and there's another great book. It's all about Leia and essentially the beginnings of kind of the First Order coming in. Bad Blood, First Blood, something like that.
Yeah,
it's
I remember that, yeah.
It's so good, and you wouldn't think that just like a political thriller starring Leia, divorced of anyone, like Han has one line in the book. It's so good. But I think we might go so far away, and we're going to be following Thrawn. And again, like I said, when you watch Rebels and you wonder why nobody talks about these two Jedi that were so present so quickly before the events of A New Hope, and then nobody talks about Ahsoka at all in the sequel trilogy, I think we're going to leave them out there. I think whatever the events of this thing is, and possibly it would tie into that Mandoverse movie that Dave Filoni is happening on, it will be galactically important, but over there. And I think all of our heroes are going to end up over there. And I think all of our sacrifices will be made there. It will be enormous. It will be earth-shattering, but not on any earth that we know. Which is why when we get to our sequel trilogy, there are allusions to some of these things, but no direct references. And that's how you can tell a really good pocket story. And I like this idea, because you can have these explosive moments. You can have all the action you want. You can have all the interpersonal drama that can happen, and you can have Jedi aplenty. And the reason we didn't know is because it was over there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes total sense. And so it'll be exciting to see what happens. They're obviously creating a way out to where all the other storylines can still exist while this storyline is still happening. But still have some type of implications into, you know, the sequel trilogy and make it all connect and cohesive. And so, no, that's great. That's great. You know, final words, what'd you guys think of this episode? And Johnny, you go first.
Yep. So for me, again, this was a little bit of a slower episode. So without that kind of very like tight connection to the Ahsoka character, this one dragged for me. This was probably my least favorite of the three, but again, just like I said last week too, that I'm by no means am I trying to kind of put the show down or say it's bad quality. It just hasn't been my cup of tea yet, but I can still respect the storytelling and the character arcs that they are working through here. And again, I think when all is said and done, I have faith in Dave Filoni. So I think once we have all eight parts together as a whole, part three won't even matter if it was too short or too slow or whatever. It'll be a very important puzzle piece in the entire eight-part story here. So looking forward to part four next week. I think the way three ended, I think four will be a little bit more intense.
Yeah, it's going to be the middle episode. Usually there's a nice little, you know, chunk to keep the fans going. So I think that's probably where we're going to start seeing our flashbacks. But Doug, what do you think?
I thought it was a really highly enjoyable pacing lap. You know, every show's got one. Every single one of these things that have been on Disney Plus, we've always got that pacing lap. And it was great. You know, we got a space battle in this one. And then we got these gigantic whales, which sounded incredible. If you've got surround sound, go back and watch that scene and crank that. Just crank it. You know, let that just wash over you. And that is the most Star Wars you will have felt since you were 5 years old. I can guarantee you that, because I did, and it was wonderful. Yeah, very, very enjoyable. You know, we get some of the really cool stuff, but I try to just watch everything from a pure entertainment perspective and then start thinking about it critically later on. Was I entertained? Absolutely. Do I have some minor gripes specifically related to whether or not I could talk to Johnny about it and be like, hey, man, could you believe we saw Jason? And he's like, who's that? Hey, man, can you believe they're talking about Thrawn again? And did you read those books by Timothy Zahn? And he's like, no, I was a Bill Belichick fan. And I'm like, well, he is my Bill Belichick. You know, it's something that unfortunately creeps into my mind at the end of every single one of these episodes where I'm like, if my mom was to watch episode 4, 5, or 6, she gets it. If she watches episode 1 of Ahsoka, it's like she watched the first Fast and the Furious movie and then started with Fast and the Furious 10 next. She has no idea what happened between point A and point B. Like, why are we spies now? Why are we international super spies and cars flying off buildings? That was just a Point Break ripoff just a minute ago. What happened?
Where's that nice Paul Walker fellow?
Yeah, what happened to him? You know, like, he is the Kanan Jarrus of that franchise.
Yeah.
And in real life. But yeah, RIP, man. It just is that unfortunate thing that I constantly have in my back pocket watching it. For me, it's always going to be spectacular, and it was gorgeous, and it delivered me everything I need out of Star Wars. I can't help feeling like they keep dropping the ball on making it accessible to you. Whoever you are that is listening to this going, what did Doug even just talk about? Right? Because I could have gone real deep bench. Like, I had all the encyclopedias when I was younger. I've got all the books over on a bookshelf right over there. But if you're just looking at Star Wars as being a highly successful space wizard adventure with a lot of bang, bang, shoot 'em up and families, that's awesome, because that's essentially what it is. All of that is here too. You just don't know it if you haven't already watched that take place.
Yeah, you're dropping in the middle of the story, really. And so it's hard to get connected to it if you don't know the backstory. But that's why we're here. You know, that's why we're here to dissect it and, you know, help our listeners to really understand what's going on and how you too can be a fan of the animated series. it's great. I, for one, haven't watched a whole lot of it. My boys love it. I've caught bits and pieces of it while sitting on the couch with them, so I'm able to piece it all together. But yeah, it's really good. Like you said, this is that one, you know, I hate to call it filler, but filler episode where it just kind of keeps things going, kind of gives you little tidbits to, you know, keep the story going. But enough action to be like, okay, that was cool, that was fun. Loved Ahsoka on the out in space with their sabers, you know, deflecting laser bolts from, you know, the fighters. I thought that was great. And yeah, like you said, you're almost expecting like a Mary Poppins, Leia, you know, float back into the ship scene. But no, they were really smart about it. You know, I think they've really listened. Dave Filoni has really listened to saw what J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson did with the sequels, and it's like, how can we not go there again? And I love those movies. I thought they were fun. I can see the nitpickiness of it and how some people weren't crazy about it, but you know, it's good to see that, you know, Lucasfilm to some extent is listening to the fans and their criticisms, and they're trying to make the best, you know, possible Star Wars for all of us.
Yeah, so it's coming down to, like, you know, it will be a cohesive story. It already is a cohesive story. Like, that's the biggest gripe I think most people have with the sequels, and you can pinpoint it to whatever, blah, 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 but it's just that there was clearly no sit down in a room where everybody was like, we're going to go here, here, and here. Cool. You do this part, you do this part, you do this part. Make sure all this stuff happens in between. Got it. That didn't happen. Here, that is unequivocally the case, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because the guy who's already been doing it for 2 decades is doing it again.
Yeah,
So you don't even have to have faith because he's got a proven track record, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And Ahsoka is probably one of the most developed. I keep saying this over every episode, but, you know, she is one of the most developed characters in all of Star Wars. I mean, we've never spent so much time with one character.
No.
In the whole saga. And not Luke, not Anakin, not Obi-Wan, not Qui-Gon, obviously not Qui-Gon. But, you know, it's, you know, you could almost say, you know, Darth Maul's a close second, even though he
died. Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
So, you know, I mean, it's pretty crazy. You know, we've spent so much time with her, and now we get to see maybe the ending of her, you know, the end of her story. Maybe. I don't know. We'll have to see how this all plays out, but very excited to see what comes next.
Me too.
Good stuff, guys. All right, so we want to thank our guest here this week, Doug, for coming on the episode, helping us get through episode 3. Again, if you want to talk to Doug here going forward, you want to pick his brain the rest of the way through this Ahsoka series, reach out to him on Instagram at Doug Dorda. You can check him out on the D54 podcast. And if you are, especially if you are a fellow dad, fellow Star Wars and Disney dad, definitely check out this guy's podcast, My Dad, I'm Dad. It is very much worth your time. That season one of episodes, the best compliment here I can give to Doug, and I've told him before, is if season one of his My Dad, I'm Dad podcast doesn't get picked up by CBS and turned into a Tuesday night at 8:30 kind of family tug at your heartstrings / comedy type show, I don't know what we're even doing on TV anymore, because those episodes so perfectly kind of hit you, like I said, with a very heartfelt story and connection to his dad, and then he brings it around and points it to how he's reliving that moment with his daughter. So I can't say enough good things about Doug as a person and a friend and a fellow podcaster, but definitely make sure you take the time, go back and check out that podcast, and check out Doug on YouTube as well, at Doug Dorda as well. Doug, thanks so much for coming on this week. Appreciate
it. This has been an absolute blast. You know, I feel like we could have done this for another 7 hours, but I feel like we all have to get to sleep at some point. But I'm honored. I really, like I told you, Johnny, I kind of felt like, because I'm not a Disney podcaster, it was almost like Roy and Mighty Ducks 2, just like, yeah, you got a nice knuckle puck, like, come on over. But, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and Tim, we've just met, but I feel like we're good buddies already, and this was just
of course
amazing. I really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, always. That's great. So, thanks for everyone for tuning in and listening. We'll catch you all guys next time.
Sounds good. Take care, boys.